So I'm going to make sense of curriculum. I don't know, when you all go over there and you look at all the options, it is overwhelming. You're going to walk in there and you're just going to go, oh my, where do I even start? I'm going to help you with where do I start. And just so you know, when you're all done, I'm not going to give it to you early, but when you're all done, I have a handout for you. 3 pages with lots of the information written down so that you will get to take it. So don't feel like, oh my gosh, I've got to write all this down. I don't give this early because I really want you to hear what I'm saying and not just read it. So, and we are starting. This is great. So does this, it's working. Okay. So you might feel like Alice in Wonderland, falling down the rabbit hole. Let's see if I'm working. I'm working. Okay. Falling down the rabbit hole. But trust me, it can all be explained. And we can explain it by putting curriculum in categories so that you know, oh my goodness, what am I into? What questions, what do I want to look for? What will work for my family? What will work for us. I'm going to start with some basics. I think you already heard some of them, but I'm going to go ahead and go through it. The law. Fortunately, in Arizona, we are not like the Queen of Hearts. She is not going to say off with your head. It's pretty easy. You've heard how to do that. That is really great. I do want to emphasize right now, because we're talking about curriculum, right, that what you have to do curriculum-wise, you need, according to the state of Arizona, you need to teach phonics, reading, okay, grammar, so your language arts, math, science, and social studies. And if you're a little older, you might say that was history. We used to call it history, social studies. That's what you have to teach. How much do you have to teach? What aspects of history do you have to teach? They don't tell you. That's up to you. How many days a week do you have to teach? That's for you to decide. How many weeks out of the year do you have to teach? That's up for you to decide. Now, if you have high schoolers, does anybody have a high schooler they're going to be homeschooling? Okay, high schoolers, it's a little different. So you do need to find out about that. I'm not going to dwell with it a lot. In fact, I do a workshop at the convention on just doing a transcript. So with high schoolers, there is a little bit more, because if you're going to give them a diploma that's going to be recognized, you need to have a little bit more structure, okay? But for the rest of you with little guys, you are just free and easy. In fact, you know, there's no rule that you have to do history every day, or even you have to do social studies, I should say. You could do social studies in the fall and do science in the spring. There's nobody that's going to come after you. Good news. So that's the law. Curriculum is a tool. This is really key. You all have a stove. I bet you most of you have a microwave. I bet you a lot of you have an Instapot. Does your stove feed your children? No. Your stove is a tool. You feed your children. Okay? Curriculum is a tool. It does not teach your children. You are teaching your children. That's good news. Now, do you use your stove when you're cooking a meal? Absolutely. I want it like a stove. I now have an Instapot. Couldn't live without it. Well, maybe I could. But I have a waffle iron. My waffle iron is important to me. I bet you half of you don't own a waffle iron and don't even care. Why am I saying all this? Because curriculum is a tool, and you need to decide what tools do you need for your family to teach your kids. And Alice, remember? She had this drink me, take me, eat me, open me. Those were tools if she needed to get bigger or smaller or get in or get out. So they're just tools. Curriculum is a tool. Now, where are you going? The Cheshire Cat famously asked, or Alice famously asked the Cheshire Cat, would you please tell me which way I ought to go from here?
"That depends a good deal on where you want to go," answered the cat.
"I don't much care," said Alice.
So the cat said, "Then it doesn't matter which way you go."
So, why are you homeschooling? Are you homeschooling because you want stronger academics? Are you homeschooling because you want to teach your children how to read? Are you homeschooling because you want your kids to have a love of learning? Are you homeschooling because you have a gifted teacher, learner? Are you homeschooling because you have a struggling student? Are you homeschooling because you want to impart your religion and your values and your morals? Are you homeschooling because you want a less stressed childhood for your children? Are you homeschooling because of bullying? Now, you could say, wow, all of those. But honestly, there's going to be one primary reason you're homeschooling, and you need to be thinking through, why am I homeschooling? And then you're going to invest in curriculum that's going to help you do that, right? And you don't get distracted by bells and whistles. Ooh, art history. Well, and then the husbands. I love husbands in here. You help your wife with this. And my husband helped me. Honey, I thought we were going to focus on math. Why are you wanting to spend hundreds of dollars on this art history curriculum? Well, because I like it. Well, yeah. So husbands help wives. Well, maybe wives help husbands. But we want to think of, who are you? Why are you doing this? The next one is, who are you? Are you a single parent? Are you working outside of the home? Are you working inside the home? Do you have grandparents that might help? Is your spouse really invested and the spouse really wants to, you know? I mean, I'm seeing more and more of that with homeschooling, a lot more. It's not just the mother, but the dad is doing a lot of the homeschooling. That's great. So that's going to make a difference. Who are you? Are you a free spirit, or are you a by the book, I'm going to have my schedule? What is important to you that you learned? Who are your children? How old are they? You have a little 4, 5, 6-year-old? How are they active? Do you have a little 5-year-old boy that is bouncing off the walls? You need to take that into consideration with what tool you use, with what curriculum you get. Are they sedentary? I've seen some little children, they just want to sit and do their schoolwork. I didn't have any of those, but I've heard about it. Do you have a struggling child, a gifted child? Do you have an angry child? Do you have a child that you're pulling out of school and he's angry? I'm going to talk to you specifically about curriculum choices a little later. How many children do you have? If you only have one or two, it's a little different than if you have 4 or 5 or 6. So this is things that you need to think through before we go. Now we're going to go into curriculum. This is really important. There's no perfect curriculum. There's no perfect curriculum. I have seen all of these styles of curriculum work, and I've seen all of them fail. So there's not the perfect curriculum. You need to figure out what curriculum will work for you and your children. Okay? So we're going to go through. I have these categories. This one is the easiest, traditional, because that's what you did. Probably. It's textbooks or workbooks. Textbooks usually are written so that they expect there to be a teacher, like Abeka is a textbook, or Bob Jones is a textbook. They have textbooks. They're used in a traditional school. So you know what that is. I don't have to go a whole lot in it, but it's probably what you had. Traditional grade level, each grade. First grade has their books, and they have a different one for each subject. There's first grade math. There's first grade science, your first grade history. And I know there's some of you who are going, there's something else otherwise than this? Yes, there is. And especially if you have more than one child, we're going to discuss that. There's a new one for each grade. Now, I'm going to move over to the information that I'm going to be handing out to you at the end of this talk. I want to talk about pros and cons of each curriculum, because every curriculum has its ups and its downs, and you need to think through, which pros do I really want and which cons can I live with? Okay, so pros. It can be easy to implement. They've got some of them have teacher's guides where they even lay out what you're supposed to say to the child. I mean, it's scripted. It's crazy. They can be easy to implement. They look structured. It is structured. It looks like real school. So if you have in-laws that are like going, you're doing what? This looks like real school. So that can help. Sometimes if you have one spouse that's not really certain about doing this, this is going to give them a sense of, oh, okay, well, this looks like real school. This is good. Cons, it's less flexible. It's because there's a lot, well, I'm going to get to that. It separates children into learning silos. So your first grader goes here, your third grader goes here, your fifth grader goes here, and they learn in their own little silos. They're not learning together. There's a way to get around that. We're going to talk about it. It can have a lot of busy work. And you think about if you're a professional teacher, you know, a regular traditional teacher, they have gifted kids that are bored, and then they have struggling kids that need extra work. And so most curriculum has busy work in it to keep the gifted kids that are all done it, keeps them busy while the teacher works with the children that are struggling. So it can have busy work, which you might need to think about. Also, one of the things, sometimes they do the record keeping. They have tests, if you like that. It can be expensive if you have lots of kids and you buy everything, especially if you buy everything new. But it can be pretty reasonable. Like, I used a traditional math program, and I bought it, and I had to buy the workbooks, but the teacher's manual, I bought it once, and I used it for three kids. And actually, I had a girlfriend, her two kids were in between the ages of my three kids. So we used that curriculum for five kids, and then we turned around and sold it for almost half of what we paid for it. So it there's ways to get around the expense, but it can be expensive. Now, I have some things in here that you're going to get to see. You need to ask the people, how much time will this take my child to do? Okay? Can I combine two kids? So let's say you have a third grader and a fifth grader. You can buy the fourth grade history and do it with both of them. Or you can buy the fourth grade science and do it with both of them. Now, math is sequential and has to be taught in order. Phonics, spelling is sequential, has to be taught in order. But your math and your science and social studies is more flexible. So do you see how? So there's ways that we can get around this. I'm hoping this is helpful. Can the children work independently? Now, when you go out and you talk to the people that are selling curriculum, they go, "Oh yeah, the kid can do this by himself." Well, some kids might be able to do it by themselves. You have to think, can my child do it by themselves? Honestly, when I was looking at this, when my oldest was, and I was looking at workbook type things where she would fill in, and I thought, she's old enough now that I can say this and nobody can call CPS on me. I would have had to have sat there with a wooden spoon and beat her to get her to fill in those workbooks. It just was not, so yeah, work, that's easy. Just give them the workbook, they fill it in. Well, will your child do that? Mine wouldn't, my oldest. My second one would, but my oldest, mm-mm. So you gotta, do you see what I'm saying here? Okay, so that was the first curriculum. And let's keep moving here. Classical. I love this. I love that. Alice, she looks so clever. This is the method that has been used historically in some of the best educational institutions in the world. It is a medieval method, and it emphasizes the trivium, grammar, logic, and rhetoric. And what that means is grammar is the time when you learn and memorize, and logic is learning how to think and reason, and then rhetoric is learning how to communicate. So they use those general categories for grade school and grammar. And in fact, over in England, they call it a grammar school, right? So grammar, logic, which is more junior high, and rhetoric, which is in high school. Its stated goal is to cultivate independent thinkers, great communicators, and leaders. It typically views the children's education in the three successive stages. It teaches history chronologically, in a four-year cycle, most of them, with an emphasis on the Greeks and the Romans. They usually also emphasize the Latin language. So, pros. The subjects are integrated. So they actually integrate in history, literature, art. I think that's really great. There's a lot of resources out there. There's a lot of resources out there, including classes that you can take, books, groups. It's great. There's a strong emphasis on literature, history, and classical writings. So that's their strength. But I told you, everybody has cons, right? It can be time-consuming, and it can require a lot of work from the parent, both prep time and implementation. It might be too scholarly for some students and some families. Some families say, I don't want to do the Greeks and the Romans and Latin. And that's okay. It might be too scholarly. It includes a lot of memorization in the early years. In fact, I had a young woman who was asking me, and she was looking at joining a classical group, and she said, and she, it was really for the, she wanted the fellowship, to be honest with you. And I said, I talked with her, and I said, I think that'll be fine with you because your children are good memorizers. They like to memorize and recite. If you don't have a good memorizer, it could be difficult. Do you know what I mean? So you need to think that through. The classes can be expensive. I didn't tell you. Also, on this thing, I'm going to have resources. So, for example, traditional textbook and workbook includes Bob Jones University Press, Abeka Books, Alpha Omega, Christian Light Education, Rod and Staff, Christian Liberty, Macmillan McGraw-Hill, and most math programs are traditional. Classical, some of the resources are going to be more books. Lost Tools of Learning by Dorothy Sayers, who is the basis of the Christian perspective of classical education. Teaching the Trivium by Harvey and Lori Bloondorn. The Well-Trained Mind by Susan Wise Bauer. Classical Education Made Approachable by Classical Conversations. So you need to ask yourself, is this doable for me? Do I think I can do this? Is this doable for my children? Do I think my children can do this? Is this developmentally appropriate for my very young children? And does this emphasize what I want to emphasize? Okay? So let's go to the next one. Come on. Literature-based or Charlotte Mason. I sort of have combined some things here. I love this picture of Alice because there she is sitting up in a tree, playing with flowers while her aunt sits below and reads out loud to her. Is that classical education? I mean, it's just crazy for those of you that know what it is. So what is classical education? Well, it uses whole, real, living books. Now, you're going to hear that term. I might be the first person to tell you. What is a living book? Well, it's a book that just almost breathes. It's so good. And it's captivating. It usually has a narrative. You learn through story. It can be nonfiction, but it's just written so engagingly that a child and an adult just go for it. It's really well-written books and a whole book. They really want to read the whole thing. So, for instance, and I like all of them. I think all of them have their strengths, okay? One of the things with this, when I did high school, I thought, I got to get serious, so I bought a literature textbook, and we read one chapter of Kidnapped by Robert Louis Stevenson? I think it was Kidnapped. And then we talked about the setting, and then the next week we were going to move on to reading a chapter of another classic book, and we were going to talk about plot or character development or something. And my oldest looked at me and said, wait, we're not finishing reading Kidnapped? Well, but we read the first chapter. We're not going to read more. It looks like a really good book. So if you're that kind of person that goes, yeah, I don't want to read just a chapter. I want to read the whole book, even if you're not going to get to read as many books, right? Then this might be something to do that you might enjoy. Especially with younger children, they do a lot of read aloud. They believe in narration and discussion, which means you read to a child or you teach a child and then they tell it back to you. So rather than writing things down in textbooks, you actually are going to narrate and discuss. So lots of parental discussion. They believe in ample playtime and nature exploration. So they really believe that children, Charlotte Mason really believes that children should go out and do nature walks and learn from being outside. They usually includes an emphasis on real life learning, ample and a lot of playtime. They think children really learn through play, and they respect the child as a person. It exposes children to other subjects through reading interesting books, taking nature walks, observing wildlife, and visiting museums. Pros. Children usually like this. I mean, can you imagine your kid? Yeah, I get to climb trees and do nature walks, and you read interesting books to me. Of course kids are going to like this. Because they get to interact with the world. They get to observe. They get to play. They get to read. They get to be creative. Children of multiple ages can be taught together. You can see that, can't you? How you could teach multiple kids. Cons. It can be expensive to buy books or time-consuming to use the library. Parents can experience anxiety. To me, this is the biggest con. Parents can experience anxiety because they don't know if they're covering enough or the correct material. And don't minimize this. There is something very powerful about finishing that little second grade history curriculum and go, I covered what I was supposed to cover in second grade. You don't have that here. And that can be difficult for a parent. Some programs, I've heard, have a massive amount of read aloud where the parents are just like going, I can't do this much read aloud. My answer is, isn't that why we have audiobooks? But we digress. So what are you going to do? You're going to ask, is this doable for me? Am I confident enough to do this? Do I have access to the books? Next one. Unit study or thematic. I like this because this is sort of the bells and the whistles curriculum. A unit study is integrated learning by studying a topic or a theme, pulling in the subjects to that theme, and it usually emphasizes real-life active work learning. Well, you know, this year I've put together a Explore Arizona workshop that I'm going to be doing at the convention, and it's basically a how to develop your own unit study on Arizona. And so what you do is you pull books, and then you have science like geology, the Grand Canyon, cactus, the animals, javelinas. You have some history, like Powell coming down the Grand Canyon, the Colorado River. You have you learn about the five C's of Arizona, which is economics. You learn about the government, how our state government works. You learn about the padres that came in from Mexico and first brought Christianity to Arizona and built some lovely missions. You learn about the cowboys. You learn about the Native Americans, that social space. Do you see how you can have a topic and you pull in all your subjects to it? That's what a unit study is. A unit study uses the real living books, just like the Charlotte Mason. And I already said that it did all that. They usually, both Charlotte Mason and unit study, encourage you to get a math program that's sequential. You realize you can't do this with math. I mean, you could do applied mathematics, but you have to teach a child how to count before he adds, before he does multiplication, before he does analytical geometry. Right? There's a progress there. Same thing with reading. You have to learn your letters and your sounds and your phonograms. There's a process. That's a linear thing. So it's everything else. Children, pros and cons. Children usually like this way of learning. You can just imagine, because they get to, same reason, they get to interact with the world, observe, play, creative. Children of multiple ages can be taught together. You can imagine that, okay? How about this? It is really exceptional for struggling learners and for gifted learners. Let me explain. Struggling learners, if you pull things together, so they learn about the cactus wren and the cactus and the monsoons, and it's all tied together. It's easier in their brain because it's not individual facts, but it's connected and tied together. It's tied together in stories, which is really helpful. So it's good, and it's also most unit studies have more of an active doing aspect, and because of that, it's really great for your struggling learners. What about your gifted learners? Well, the strength of that textbook is it had a last page. The weakness for a gifted kid is it has a last page. It's limited. Whereas with this, like I had a child that was just so reading. She was just a huge reader. And when we did the Civil War, she read a stack of books on the Civil War, a biography of Clara Barton, a biography of Ulysses S. Grant, a biography of Robert E. Lee. Harriet Tubman, she just read this huge stack of books. And she went over to a textbook, because I had a textbook, and she goes, "Wow, they cover the Civil War in 25 pages. Now, of course, if you use a textbook, you can go get more books. So there is a balance here, you know. But you can see that it just really opens it up for that gifted kid. They get to go deep. They get to learn a lot because of the way it's structured. Relatively low cost, except for you have to use the library. That's a con. It can be expensive to buy books. Again, same thing. Parents can express... can experience anxiety. It can be time intensive for the parent because you're learning with them. You're providing books, you're learning with them. But it's, if you think about it, rather than doing separate history and science for three kids, you just do one unit for all three kids. And you also can get the older ones, think of the War for Independence. You can be teaching your sixth grader the War for Independence, and you'd get Sam the Minuteman is dead, or Sam the Minuteman, not he's dead, Sam the Minuteman, I'm mixing two books, and you let your eighth grader read Sam the Minuteman to your five-year-old. And there's a double duty there, do you see? So you can see how that works. Examples, Go Global by Cultivated Learning, My Father's World, Five in a Row, Amanda Bennett Unit Studies, and Konos. Unschooling. Now, unschooling gets sort of a bad rap, in my opinion. I also like to call it child-led, interest-driven, relaxed homeschooling. This is where parents provide engaging materials and instructions when the children want them. They usually have creative projects and outcomes. And you're going, wow, really? Yes. Children learn as they pursue that are interested in them. I've seen people do this with very young children. They go, you know, they look at them and go, well, what do you want to learn about? They might still do phonics and math, but like, what do you want to learn about in history? Oh, you're interested in... or science. You're interested in bats? Let's go to the library and get bat books. So the child, it's child-led. The parent has to ensure that interesting and engaging materials are readily available at home and to facilitate the natural curiosity. The parent teaches specific skills such as reading when the child is interested. Both in-depth and broad understanding is huge in people who use this kind of curriculum well, if they do it well. If they don't do it well, it's called neglect. But if they do it well, it can be really fabulous. The kids can really learn a lot. Rather than lesson plans, rather than textbooks, tests, and grading, the children usually keep journals, and they do create art, music, or projects. Pros, children develop self-motivation as they are empowered to take the reins of their own education. There's stronger retention. This style works well with multiple children and can help build family relationships. It can be chaotic. This is the cons. It can be chaotic because of the lack of structure. It can be difficult to assess what the child actually knows. And it takes, I think, to me, this is the biggest thing. It takes a really special kind of parent that can actually encourage and motivate the child while neither ignoring them nor manipulating them. There are some resources online which you will get when you pull this out. And I think you need to ask yourself, is my child burned out? Can I? Should I take this unusual path? And I want to tell you a story. I had a friend who pulled out a 12-year-old son out of school, and he hated school. Hated school. And he was doing poorly in school. And she said, what do I do? And I said, well, you need to get a math program that can evaluate him, get him on where he's at, and start working him to get his math skills up. Same thing with phonics. And there are phonics reading programs out there that are specifically for older kids so they don't feel dumb. Okay. But you need to do that. And then I said, and for history, social studies, and science, well, what is he like? And she said, nothing. He hates school. And I said, no, not school. What does he enjoy in life? And she looked at me and rolled her eyes and said, basketball, basketball, basketball. And I went, oh, we can work with that. We can work with that. And she goes, what do you mean? And I said, you need to tell him that what he's going to do is he's going to learn about basketball. And then he's going to teach her about basketball because clearly she didn't know much. And she just goes, how does that work? And I said, well, the first day you go find out, are there any basketball magazines that you can start subscribing to? And then first day you're going to hand them paper. And I said, I want you to write down every NBA team in the United States of America with the city and state where it's located. And he goes, okay. This really did work. This is so much fun because not only did she did it. And then I said, the next day you hand him a map of the blank map of the United States and say, mark where all the teams are. And then you start working with who are some of the famous players, and you go find out if there's biographies about them. And what you're going to do is when your child reads the book, he doesn't have to write a book report. He tells you, tell me about Wilt Chamberlain, I'm dating myself, Michael Jordan, all the old guys, right? Kobe Bryant, he's old too now, isn't he? But whoever it is, tell me about them. Let him learn about it. And do you see that this is going to be, then we're going to start talking about statistics. Well, tell me, what is a layup? Like, I mean, we're dumb, but we're not that dumb. What is a layup? And now where do you have to hit it off the backboard to make sure it goes in? How do you know that? And then you start talking about angles. And do you see what's going on? What is the air pressure in a basketball? Have him go find it out and report back to you. Do you see how this unschooling and doing this for a year could help a burned out child? I'm sorry I took so long on that, but if there's one person in here with a burned out kid, especially like that 12, 13 years of age, that's worth the price of admission. Eclectic. That's where most of us are at. We mix and match. We personalize our goals for each child. We use a mix of them. We might do this, that. And I think it was mentioned earlier, that's sort of what most of us do. And it's great. Most homeschoolers end up here. But honestly, most homeschoolers start traditional. Parents choose what will work best for their child during each season of their life. It allows parents to teach what they think is the most important. Parents may lack confidence or direction of selecting resources and curricula in a piecemeal fashion, and they might want just to pick one set that gives you everything, and that's fine. And I will have resources on my handout. And how am I doing on time? Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Okay. Considerations. One of the things, too, I was going to tell you, all speakers, these are our opinions. You take them for what it's worth. You take what helps you. If I say something and you go, oh, I think she's totally wrong, that's fine. You go out and do what you want to do with your kids because they're your kids. Okay, considerations. Who is directing? I think no matter what curriculum you use, you need to think through who is going to be directing the education. Is it going to be you or is it going to be somebody else? I'm not saying it should always be you. I outsourced music. I paid a gentleman a lot of money to teach my children how to play piano when they got into high school. This is also free. This worked so good. I said, so do you think that she's getting as much music as she would get in high school? He goes, oh, much better. And I said, oh, okay, could what I'd like you to do is could you add like a writing assignment or two with piano? And could you grade it? and could you give me a grade for her? And he said, yes, I can, for no extra cost. So I'm not saying that we don't ever outsource, but you need to think through who is going to keep the records, who's going to teach, who is, and it's okay if it's somebody else sometimes, but you don't want to just pass it all off. I mean, you want to be invested in at least a large aspect of it, in my opinion. Okay, I'm going to talk about considerations. Come on. Uh-oh. Well, what it is would be online. And a lot of people are going, yeah, I just want an online. I'm wondering if this year we're going to get that many questions, because I think that a lot of people have seen that most children do not learn well online. But there's still that question. My opinion is that little kids do not learn well online. I would not do online education for little kids, period. And when I say little kids, I mean like under 7. That's just not how they're wired. I would not do online. Now, are you going to get maybe a little math writer or computer program that helps them drill their math facts? Sure, something like that. But I mean, were they really sitting there for long periods? I think even with high school, I think it's something that you need to consider. I think even some of the socialization issues, I've seen that some kids that are on online schools, their friends are online. And I think as humans, we should have face-to-face friends. That's my opinion. You can do whatever you want, right? But I'm just explaining to you why I think that we need to consider. Now, a class or two, absolutely. That's great. But I don't think younger children should not sit in front of a screen for hours upon hours. I just don't think it's optimal. And I don't think it's necessary. Ages of kids. This is my next one. Oh, there we go. It's working. Ages of kids. How old are your kids? The younger your children, the less structured. We get up, maybe in the morning we do a half an hour, and I'm talking 5, 6-year-olds, a half an hour of phonics, maybe a half an hour of math. I read to you a little bit. We play. Do you let them go play video games? No. You get blocks and Legos, and you know, there you play outside. You want them to be doing things that are building their intellect and their abilities, not just watching something. Number of kids. Do you have one or two? It's pretty easy. Really, any of these curriculums could work. If you've got more than two, you're going to have to do something. You're either going to have to combine them, which means you're going to teach them together in some sense. Again, you don't have to teach everything together, but maybe you're going to do history together, or you're going to do math together. You can combine them, or you make independent learners. I had a girlfriend who did this, and she had 5 kids, and she basically said, I am teaching 1 intensely at a time, kindergarten and first grade. Get them reading, and then they're more independent. She still checked with them. She still said, show me what you've done. Great, let me grade your math. So she was still doing something, but she was not actively working with them. They were doing much more independent work. And she had 2 that were really close in age, her last 2 boys. And the last boy didn't get to go to kindergarten until he was 6 because, you know, his almost Irish twin hadn't quite got on how to read. And so you can make them independent. That's a way that you can skin this cat. You need to ask when you're buying curriculum, when you're looking at curriculum, about how long per day will this take? One of the things with the video schools, honestly, some of the video schools, and I'm, you know, you just have to ask them, how many hours a day are they going to work? And then they have to do, like if they watch videos for 6 hours a day of teaching, and then they have 3 hours of filling in the workbooks, that is a long day. And you need to think that through if your child can do that or not. Okay? So how long will this take? You need to ask, and you're going to. I know you're going to ask your friends, so what do you use, you know? And that's great. Then you follow up with, why do you like it? Or, why do you dislike it? I had a friend who, I was looking at two different curriculums, and I was looking at this one, and she goes, oh, that's an awful curriculum. Don't stay away from that one. And I said, oh, why? And she said, you have to go to the library and get books. And I went, I go to the library every week, sometimes more than once. I love going to the library. Going to the library is not a problem for me. That actually might be a reason why I like it rather than dislike it. So do you see what I'm saying? So when you ask your friends, and when you don't be afraid, can we work together? You might be able to work together with a friend, which can make life easier. You can and will change your mind next year. And that's okay. I suggest not changing your mind mid-year unless it's really, really, really bad. Don't change your mind. Give it at least a year. But next spring, you're gonna honestly, you know, and I love to do this because I think I'm considered a pioneer. Am I considered a pioneer? Not quite Father Kino, but I was doing this when there weren't this many homeschoolers in the whole state of Arizona as there are what in this room our room right now. And honestly, every spring we got together and said, are you gonna do it again next year? I don't know. Going to do it again next year? And we really honestly reevaluated, and people don't believe that. They think, oh, you got to make a commitment forever. No. You know, marriage till death, okay? A commitment to Christ forever. Homeschooling, take it for a year. Let's see how it works. And curriculum, take it for a year and see how it works, and then you can and will change. Now, you don't change just because, oh, she said I'm going to change everything. I mean, if it's working, don't change it. Keep it. But you can and will change so you don't feel like I've screwed up homeschooling because I picked this curriculum and it wasn't the right one. No, just do something different next year. So that is where we are with the curriculums and the considerations. I got through that really, really fast. What I'm going to do, with your permission, I'm going to finish this with yes. You can do it. Curriculum is just a tool. Remember, curriculum's just a tool. Don't be overwhelmed. You can teach your children. Heather and I are speaking. Heather is my daughter. I homeschooled her. We lived to tell the tale. We still like each other. In fact, we go do things together, and she is in the throes of homeschooling her kids. So these are just some of the workshops that we're going to be doing. I hope you're coming to the convention. It is so worthwhile. I love it. I've come every year. And again, if you have any questions, we're at booth A703 or here at the end. What I'd like to do now is I would like to pass out these handouts, if I could get somebody who could help. Wow, I practiced this at home, and I filled all my time. And this, I'm a little early, which I think is okay, because we're going to be able to have questions. Now, you're not going to believe this, but Staples put number page 3 as page 2 and page 2 as page 3. So if you're thinking this doesn't make sense, that's because, and I'm not going to blame them. I may have handed it to them incorrectly. That may have happened. And I was not going to unstaple all of them. So as you're looking at, but I want you to be able to take a look. If you have any questions, we'll take maybe 5 minutes of questions, and then we'll have a stretch break. But if you have any specific questions right now, I'd be happy to answer them. Yes, sir. Right. Great question. The question was, traditional schools do 9 months and then they take the 3 months off. What are our options as homeschoolers? Anything you want. Anything you want. I will be honest with you, most homeschoolers with littler kids, like grade school kids, we take the whole month of December off. because there is so much going on at Christmas time, and there's baking and cooking, and there's rereading Christmas books, and there's church programs, and just so most of us take the whole month of December off. Now, traditionally, there's like 36 weeks in a school year, but that is not required by Arizona law. So, yes, a lot of people can start homeschooling. In fact, when I was homeschooling, I always homeschooled in August because I went, it's so stinking hot, we might as well be doing school, you know, because it's too hot. So it is totally flexible. Yes, you can go to Disneyland in October when nobody else is there. Yes, it's very, very flexible. And again, with younger children. Those of you that have high schoolers, when you're doing your transcripts and you're saying that you're giving them high school credit, you're saying that a Carnegie unit is 160 hours worth of work, so you have to, it's a little different with high school. I just give you that caveat. With high school, it's a little different. I mean, you still can do it during the summer, but it's just, there's a little bit more structures on the time frame. And honestly, with homeschooling, if you're homeschooling little kids, it should only take 3-4 hours a day. You're going, oh my gosh, well, what are the teachers doing? And I said, well, think of a kindergarten teacher handing out just scissors to 25 children and making sure they don't cut each other's hair or other things that they shouldn't cut. I mean, there's just, whereas you're just like, here's the scissors. I mean, it's just, there's a lot. Reading. A good kindergarten, first grade has an aide that will do some one-on-one reading. Most kids in a kindergarten class, they only get to read out loud to a teacher maybe 5 minutes a day. But if you have 25 kids, that 5 minutes a day, even if you have two teachers, do you see what I'm saying? So homeschooling, especially the younger grades, is a lot less. Now, what we don't want to do is that doesn't mean they get to watch a Netflix or play video games. What you need to do is you need to provide them a creative play. You need to provide them art material. You need to provide them good things to read. You need to provide more to them, okay? You're going to get to do explore things outside, have a nature table where they collect their little, you know, cicada bugs or, well, I actually found out that there's some mothers that don't like that. I always loved that kind of stuff, you know. As long as it was no longer living, it could come in. You know, if it was living, then I needed to be considered. But I even have a grandson. I'm not going to tell you how old he is. He's 8. He loves scorpions, and he captures them and freezes them. I know. We're very permissive. This is just, I've just ruined my reputation. But do you see what I'm saying? Children need to have that. Yes, ma'am. The question is, can I do pieces of each? Yes, you can. One of the good things with marriage, I assume you're married to him, is that one of you is going to want to do everything and the other one's going to be a little bit more of a realist. And so you need to counterbalance each other. And your 4-year-old should not be stressed out. If it's fun, if he likes to memorize and he wants to sing the little classical conversation songs, that's fine. But if you don't want to stress him. But yes, you can do a little bit, you know, that's an eclectic. You can mix and match. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am. That's a great question. Is there a list of what they need to know so you can get rid of the anxiety with the less structured? Well, first of all, there is what they need to know in math. You're going to get a math program, probably, and a phonics spelling program. And that's going to be linear, and that's going to lay it out. History and science, there's some books called, Hirsch wrote some books on what a third grader should know, what a fourth grader should know. You can go find those. A lot of times the curriculums will talk about what they teach. And so I believe education is a net. And when you build a net, you send a string this way, you send a string this way, a thing of a string net. It's got all these strings. It also has what's holes in it, okay? And so you want to have this net. So in grade school, you're learning about plants and animals, and you're learning about the stars and planets and spaceships, and you're learning about George Washington and the War for Independence, and maybe you're learning about Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War, and maybe you're going to learn something about the Greeks and Romans, though I honestly don't do that until high school. Shall I tell you why? The Greeks, I did this in high school. My second born came to me and said, the Greeks, at age 14 or 13. She said, the Greeks, sex, idolatry, and some good art. And I went, yep, pretty much. So that's why we waited. Now, again, this is homeschooling. If you want to teach all of that to your five-year-old, go for it, because it's your home school. But that's just my opinion, and that's my reasoning. I think reasoning, again, you want to hear the reasoning. Where was I going on that? Oh, the net. Okay, so you're building a net. You're going to have holes. So when you want to, at the end of your grade school years, you want to be covering most of these things a little bit. And then when you go into high school, you get American history. You get world history. You maybe do ancient history. You're going to do, do you see what I'm saying? You're going to do biology. That's all the life sciences. You're going to do physics, which is the physical sciences. You're going to do chemistry, and maybe you're going to do earth science. So what you want is you want a net so that when you go into high school, you can hold all that information. So it's not good if you get through grade school and you go, what's the Civil War? I don't know. That's not good. That might be typical in America, but it's not good. And so you can go and look, but a lot of them, they will tell you what they're going to cover. But it's not something like in third grade, they learn about immigration, and they do the Statue of Liberty, and they recite the Emma Lazarus poem. That's not third grade or fifth grade or sixth grade. It's like, it would be nice if they sort of learned some of that at some time. But it's not a sequential thing. So it's a little tougher. Does that sort of make sense? Okay. And how are we doing on time? Do you want to go ahead and end? We will end now. Thank you for your attention.